Harihi Om Sahana Vavatu Sahana Bhunaktu Sahaviryan Karabhavahai Tejasvi Navadhi Tamastuma Vidvishavahai Om Shanti Shanti Shantihi Om Jaya Sri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Garadhara Shivasari Gaura Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare Jai. So now Draupadi, while they're sitting there and everything's very peaceful, now Draupadi's feeling her you know, anger at the situation, you know, the injustice that's there come up in her heart. And so she starts to express that to Yudhishthir, and, you know, talking about, you know, now is the time to fight, not to forgive. And so Yudhishthir, you know, hears everything. He understands her anxiety. He feels bad that she's been, you know, insulted and is in this plight, and he feels he's responsible. But at the same time, he understands that she doesn't fully grasp the full content of what's there in their situation like that. So he makes that point. Draupadi could not, this was not the time to make war. The pain in the moment would stay with him for the rest of his life, but this was not the time to make war. Draupadi could not understand the entire situation. He replied gently, "Intelligent lady, through anger we may sometimes gain wealth, but anger ultimately destroys mankind. Real prosperity crowns one who conquers anger and brings adversity to one whom anger controls. Anger is the root of all destruction. An angry man commits sin blindly. An angry man will kill even his preceptor and insult his elders. He cannot distinguish between right and wrong. There is nothing an angry man might not say or do, even to the point of sending himself to death's abode. Knowing this, I will not indulge in anger, Draupadi. Rather, I will strive to control it." So, because she made that point, is that, you know, is your anger not, you know, been awoken and all that? Because, you know, all this injustice is there, and they are Kshatriyas. They don't tolerate injustice. So does not all this injustice make you angry? And so he's pointing out is that this anger that she's feeling now, but that's, it's not the right time for the anger. If they're on the battlefield in that, there's a battle, then of course there's going to be that anger is going to be shown. But if they're not on the battlefield, then in these situations, then you have to be cool-headed. You have to be thoughtful. You have to deal with all these things. Because otherwise, yes, the emotion will get you going. From the emotion, there'll be that stirring of feelings. There'll be, you know, you have a direction. There's a feeling of purpose. And all those different things can come up. But then the difficulty comes is that then you may be doing something that's not correct. So you can't tell the difference between right and wrong. So anger has to be used very carefully, like that. So Kshatriyas, they only use it on the battlefield. Draupadi listened respectfully. She knew her husband's grasp of religion and morality was unsurpassed. He was capable of instructing even the gods. Sitting on a simple mat of kusgrass, Yudhishthir continued. Right? Because that was her point. Why is he sitting on the kusgrass mat? Why is he not sitting on the throne? You know, in Hastinapur. So he knows all this, so she knows a lot, and she's explained, but this point here of the control of the anger and when to use it, because her point, she's just looking at there's injustice, and so one must become angry and correct that, right? But he's pointing out, but this is not the time to apply anger, because otherwise then you may do things that are going to be a problem. When a weak man is oppressed by one more powerful, he should not display anger, lest he bring about his own destruction. There are no blessed regions in the hereafter for those who destroy themselves. Right? So if you act in a way that won't be beneficial for yourself, that you destroy yourself because of your actions, there's no good reward for that. There's no piety for that. Like that. It means by that destruction and that itself might be the punishment or the correcting factor. But there's no glory in that. Thus, the weak should always control their anger. Only fools praise anger, considering it equivalent to energy, right? Because when there's anger, you feel inspired, so they think it's energy. But it's not energy, because energy, you do something positive. Anger, you do something negative. So they're quite different. The wise keep anger at a distance. The man consumed by anger does not easily acquire generosity, dignity, courage, skill, or other attributes possessed by men of character. The wise consider him a man of character, restrains his wrath. Right? That's considered what's good. So all the good qualities come when you control anger. And if you don't control anger, then you'll always be engaged in things that are going to be destructive. The pious always praise such a man because they understand that the forgiving man is always victorious. One who represses, because we have to see victorious doesn't necessarily mean in the immediate position. Victorious means in the overall, where that living entity is going to be positioned. By that forgiving nature, by dealing, by using the good qualities, he's going to elevate himself. And those who are creating injustices in that, then they'll go to a lower. So who's won? You know, that's the position. One who represses his anger, even when antagonized, rejoices in the next world. For this it is said that a wise man, whether strong or weak, even if in difficulty, should always forgive his persecutor. By now, Yudhishthira's brothers had gathered and were listening. Yudhishthira went on describing the glories of forgiveness. If there were not forgiving persons in this world, chaos would soon prevail. If kings and other superiors gave way to anger, the distressed people would quickly meet with ruin. If inferiors do not tolerate the superior's admonishments, sin will take root and destroy mankind. I shall cite to you the verse spoken in ancient times by the Rishi Kasyapa. Forgiveness is virtue, forgiveness is sacrifice, and forgiveness is the Vedas. So it's one of the first qualities that's necessary, like that is training. So that's why in the Vedic culture, the training is how to develop this forgiveness. That's the aspect. Because otherwise, if there's no forgiveness, everybody will just rail against each other. Because it always goes that, let's say you have the children, you know, child one makes a funny face at, you know, the second kid. The second kid then, you know, pokes him, right? Because the first was just visual. Now he pokes him. Now because he pokes him, the other kid now hits him. Because he hits him, the other guy gets up on top of him, completely tackles him. So that's how it works. It's not he poked and then he'll poke back. He looked. No, it always increases. That's the problem. So if there's no forgiveness, he'll just get worse and worse till there's nothing left. So therefore, it's virtue, it's sacrifice, and the end is in the Vedas. Forgiveness is purity and penance. It is truth, piety, religion, and the holy Narayana. Through forgiveness, the universe is sustained. And by practicing forgiveness, a man can attain to everlasting regions of bliss. Right? So the earth, she's known for tolerance of that forgiveness. Because if not, then, you know, people are digging all the time, doing all kinds of stupid stuff. But she's tolerating that and giving us a place to stay. Because otherwise, if she didn't forgive, then unless you were doing the most proper work, you know, who would have a place to stay? You know, like that. How then can I renounce forgiveness, gentle lady, in which is established spirituality, truth, wisdom, and the three worlds? Both this world and the next belong to the forgiving person. Therefore, forgiveness is considered the highest virtue. Yudhishthira smiled at his wife. Bhishma, Drona, Vidura, Kripa, and the other Kuru elders desire peace. Vyasadeva and the other rishis also praise peace, Panchali. Therefore, let us first try for a peaceful settlement. If Dhritarashtra yields to temptation and does not return our kingdom, then the Bharat race will be destroyed. Because the point is peace is the first thing, because you have in the political field, then you have these four aspects of, first is conciliation, then after that, then there's going to be praise and gifts and those kind of things. If that doesn't work, then there's going to be dividing and conquering. Then if not, then there's going to be war. And so of them, the most efficient are conciliation and war. They're definite. right? And so, but Manu mentions that your first option is always conciliation. Always want to make peace. So peaceful resolution is always the first thing that you want to do. If that doesn't work only, then war is the solution. So that's what he says. First thing is peace. Everybody wants peace. And so that's what we'll try for first. And if that works, then fine. And because of forgiveness, we'll move on. But if they don't, they give in to their temptations to, you know, not give them back their kingdom. Then he says there'll be war. And in this war, the whole Bar race will be destroyed. Because Duryodhana is such that he'll bring every king on the planet that he can to this war. It won't just be, okay, you know, like Jarasandha, okay, you and Bhima. No, he'll have to bring everybody in that because he's so attached to his position, so avaricious. And so in that process, then you'll see is that all the kings of the world will be destroyed. So he's just saying, you know, that's it. So that's why he wants peace, because that's the whole point. She's saying, why aren't you getting up and take care of this injustice? Because taking care of this injustice by war means the destruction of basically all the Kshatriyas of the world. You know, because it's not just a regional thing. Duryodhana won't tolerate that. He will be comfortable with destroying the whole world as long as he's the king of it afterwards. Even if there's no one left, as long as he's the king, he's fine. While Yudhishthir would rather forgive and come to a situation that, you know, amicable, that they can work together and save the world. So this is the difference. So that's why he said Draupadi doesn't fully understand what we're dealing with. One is she doesn't understand the forgiveness, and two, she doesn't understand what we're dealing with. But let me not be the cause, princess. Forgiveness and humility means he's not going to be the cause, right? Because he'll go back. You can say ultimately they were the cause, but now it'll go back. And now they've had their chance for righteousness. Now give back the kingdom. That was the original point. Means, in other words, he did his part of the vow. His part of the vow, he went to the forest. Their part of the vow is they give the kingdom back when he returns. So if they break their vow, then there's nothing you can do. But let me not be the cause, princess. Forgiveness and humility, both of which are unknown to Duryodhana, are the qualities of the self-control. They constitute eternal virtue. I shall therefore adopt them. Draupadi was still doubtful. If virtue conferred victory and success on a man, then how could Yudhishthir have undergone such a calamity? He had never strayed from virtue at any time. Even during the gambling match, he acted only with virtuous intentions, right? And she understood it at the time. Means when she came out, she wasn't angry with Yudhishthir. She was angry with the Kauravas for taking advantage of a virtuous man. Even during the... Now he was cast into misfortune while the sinful Duryodhana enjoyed prosperity. The princess said, "It seems to me, O king, that although you always protect virtue, virtue has not protected you. Even the celestials know that you live only by virtue. I am sure you would abandon your brothers and me before abandoning virtue. You serve the Brahmins and everything else you possess. You never disregarded your elders, equals, or even inferiors. Although you conquered the earth, you did not become proud. You have performed great sacrifices and given unlimited charity. Even now, while living a life of hardship in this forest, your virtue has suffered no diminishment." Right? So he's not lost anything. It's not, because sometimes... for ordinary person, poverty can lose good qualities because they become so desperate and so desirous of material prosperity that they give up all, you know, good activity and all that. Draupadi looked at her husband in the eyes as she made a point. "Despite all this, still your intelligence was perverted by destiny, and you gambled away everything, your wealth, kingdom, brothers, even me. How could one like you, who are simple, gentle, modest, liberal, and truthful, be drawn into gambling? Gambling is a vice. I cannot understand how it is possible." Although Draupadi understood that everything was under the control of the Supreme Lord, she felt her faith challenged by Yudhishthir's seeming inexplicable situation. Right? So she's seeing is that he's getting the situation. He does everything good, but he has a bad situation. Duryodhana is just a rat bag from day one, and he's got all the facilities. So she's seeing that this is a problem. And at the same time, as he's so virtuous, he's never given up virtue. How could he have gambled when it's, you know, it's all bad qualities come out in gambling? So she's a little bewildered by all this, you know, because it's more the situational aspect. Because religion means the situation is there, you work to make the situation nice, that should give you a better situation. But what's missing in this formula is, you work, is it only to make the situation? I'm in a situation, I work to better the situation so I can work to better the situation so I can work to better the situation. But there must be a third place. There must be some other place where the goal is. In other words, within a situation, I use my knowledge and skills and endeavor, you know, to get a result. But that result has to be something more than situational, right? Situational does come, but by the situation, one's not satisfied. Because Yudhishthira is in the forest, he's satisfied. Duryodhana is on the throne and just won not only his kingdom, but Yudhishthira's kingdom, which is much greater. He's still not satisfied. So you can understand is that situation, acting within that, increasing that situation is not actually what satisfies the individual. There's something more, there's something beyond, right? So then there's going to be, in their case, as devotees. With the karmis, no, it would work out. Then with the karmis, we just say, yes, they're doing everything perfect this life, so it will work out for them perfectly. But in their past life, they've done something wrong, and that's why they ended up in the forest, like that. So then you can say like that. But because they're great devotees of the Lord and all that, and they're eternal associates of the Lord, then you can know that Krishna has his plan because he comes to protect the devotees and he comes to destroy the demons. So they're protected, though their situation wasn't exactly the same. It's taken a drop in, you could say, materialistic standards. But as far as devotional standards and that, now it's a much better place for practicing their devotion. But at the same time, why is that there? Because then it will cause this war, which will then bring all the demoniac kings of the world together in one place at one time. And in 18 days, you've gotten rid of the whole everyone. And so there's an overall plan. And because of this, and this unfolding in that. That's why the Mahabharata is still popular and read and appreciated 5,000 years after it's been documented, right? And so that's the point, is that, you know, people always want to see, you know, something, some action, some of that. So ultimately, he gets the result. And all the demigods, all the sages, they've all said the same thing. Surely, O king, all creatures are made to act by the Lord, even as a puppet is moved by its controller. No one can pass a moment independently. God ordains our happiness and distress in accordance with the result of our past actions. Everyone depends upon the Lord. He brings us together and uses us as instruments to fulfill each other's karma. Right? So, in other words, what I do fulfills someone else's karma. What they do will fulfill my karma. So just as you live by the benefit from all from other living entities, you give benefit to others. It means you're getting benefit from them, you're giving benefit to them. Right? Just as they're giving benefit to you, you're giving benefit to them. Does that make sense? I get my good results from others, I get my bad results from others. I perform the activity, but it's still coming through others. That's just the way it works. And so then that's why he's saying it's all controlled. So the Lord controls all the living entities through the modes of nature, that everyone, according to whatever they've done, they get the results of their actions. It thus seems to me that the Lord who has brought about our calamity, but how has he sanctioned such injustice, so contrary to the ways of virtue and truth? And if he is not to blame, then it means that the controlling principle is who has the most power. We're actually saying either he's in control and it's all by your work and karma and everything like this. And so then it works out. But if that's not, like we see, is that if he's not to blame for our results and all that and how it's being that, then the question comes up. So then it's just who has more power? Is they the ones like that? Like that. If actions are not bound with God-given consequences, then I lament for those who are not powerful, because if God's taking care of everything, then you can understand it's going bad now, it'll get better later. Or if I'm better now, but I'm not acting properly, get worse later. But if it's not that, if God's not in control, then that means it's just who's powerful. Then she says, I lament for those who are weak because they'll get nothing like that. So we'll stop the leave the conversation at this point, and next time we'll hear what Yudhishthira Maharaj has to say. Om Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Jai Shri Prabhupada.